Stan Hieronymus, Annie Johnson, Denny Kahn, Drew Beecham, Ken Schramm, Charlie Papazian. These rockstar brewers and many others will be at this year's HomebrewCon, June 15th through 17th in Minneapolis. Join them. Make sure to register for the best beer gathering of the year. Visit homebrewcon.org to sign up. That's homebrewcon.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, the second of a two-part conversation with our longtime Basic Brewing Radio alumnus, Casey Letellier, who's brewing at West Mountain Brewing Company and is on the road to starting his own Ivoryville Brewing Company. We'll talk to Casey about his plans and sample more of his delicious beers. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. Don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can find me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com, click on that Amazon ad at the right-hand side of the page, take you back to Amazon, and you won't notice any difference. But we sure will. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the iHeartRadio app as well. And if you want to put a tip in our virtual tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who's done so already. I'm recording this episode ahead of time. So if something major has happened in the brewing world that I seem to be ignoring, well, that's why. If all goes as planned, my family and I are right now touring around Victoria and Vancouver, British Columbia, up in Canada. And many thanks to everybody who has written in with beer and travel tips. Lots of good information from a bunch of folks. And I have a feeling we're only going to be able to scratch the surface. But that'll give us a reason to return to that area. So I'm looking forward to going up there and maybe bumping into you somewhere. Who knows? Well, since there's nothing new to report here, and Casey and I talked for a good long time, I want to get right to it. But not before I talk about our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. I told you last week about brewing my grapefruit juice pale ale with my High Gravity electric brew-in-a-bag system. Well, the airlock is smelling really good this morning, and brewing with the Warthog EBC-130 electric controller is really fun. It's got two modes, mash and boil. In the mash mode, you set your strike water temperature, and the controller automatically feathers the power level as it approaches that set point. So it doesn't go, you know, zooming past it. As I used to do with my propane burner, and as I imagine some electric controllers might. And in boil mode, you can dial in your power level precisely using the digital readout. For example, I found out this past weekend that with my system, 75% power was great to get a nice rolling boil. Plus, the Warthog EBC-130 has a timer feature that you can use to shut off the power, say, at the end of an hour boil, or you can just have it beep at you if you like, or you can just not use the timer at all. Remember, propane puts the pain in brewing, and electricity is a lot of fun. Check out the full line of turnkey electric brewing systems and standalone controllers at family-owned and run HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. I'm in vacation mode already. The horse can see the barn, as they say. Okay, when I sat down with Casey Letellier, he set out 10 samples in front of me. So I thought it was best to divide this interview into two parts so we could talk leisurely and sample leisurely and talk about each beer and give each one its due. And as might be expected, this second set led to a more philosophical discussion than the first. But it's all good stuff. I had a lot of fun talking to Casey. He has a ton of good information and brews wonderful beers. So let's go back to West Mountain Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas for round two. Casey Letellier, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you.
It's been a week since we've been together.
I know. So much has happened. There was that thing on the news.
And that other thing. Whoo! Who knew? Okay, for those who are tuning in this week, you need to stop, go back and listen to last week's show and get caught up. This is a rare two-parter. We're talking to Casey Letellier, who's been a friend of the podcast. Well, you were a friend of the podcast before you were on the show. We corresponded via email, and I don't know how you found us so early. I mean, I guess one thing is we were the first 100% homebrew podcast on iTunes. It helps to build an audience if you can be first, but
first and still the best.
Oh, stop it. Thank you, but stop it. Oh, shucks. Now,
it's true. And I feel like I and this is not just buttering you up because, you know, you said nice things about me. I'm just saying nice things back. I'm amazed by the continued sort of conversation in the beer world that happens on your show, and I continue to benefit from it, even now, years later. I keep finding things on the show that I put into practice in my brew day, and it's great. I love it. So thank you for all of these great years of exploring the sort of evolution of the beer world, because it's like happening in front of us, and it's been fun to hear it through the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and I have to pass those thanks on to everybody who's been on the show, because 99.9% of the wisdom that comes on the show doesn't come from me. It comes through me, the people I talk to who are doing all these wonderful things. And talking about evolution, one of the reasons why I wanted to keep in contact with you is because of your evolution from a home brewer brewing in his living room in Siloam Springs to now you're on the verge of opening your own commercial brewery, the Ivory Bill Brewing Company in Siloam Springs. Now, talk about your system. Let's go into the hardware side of things. Talk about your system.
My system here or my system in the Ivory Bill?
Your new system. Let's move. We love West Mountain. West Mountain's a wonderful place, but we've talked about the West Mountain system before. Talk about your system.
Okay. So as I sort of started dreaming about my brewery, I started making a list of my favorite breweries around the world that I visited. Places where I just feel like they have something very special about their character. And a lot of it ended up being breweries that aren't necessarily traditionally beautiful in the whole, like, here's a big room full of shiny stainless steel cylinder conicals. So De Dal in Essen in Belgium, and West Vallatron, and most of my favorite British breweries all do fairly wide format open fermenters. Hook Norton, man, like that's. I wish we could get good fresh Hook Norton here. And I feel like there are some technical reasons for that in terms of the character that yeast produces when it's not fermenting under pressure. But I also think there's kind of a philosophical kind of connection to that too. So that is the sort of like hardware Well, that's the sort of those decisions are going to drive my hardware selection. So I'm looking at bulk dairy tanks, which have a nice horizontal kind of format to them. They have lids, but they aren't a pressure vessel, so you can kind of keep out the dust and the bugs, but yeast can kind of ferment happily at atmosphere. And they're also perfectly situated for top cropping. Looking for a yeast strain of kind of some British ancestry that I can top crop and repitch, because that is another sort of characteristic of most of my favorite sort of breweries, is that they're doing top cropping, including some like classic American breweries like Anchor. And even though they're like a classic American brewery, they have something really special about the yeast profile that I think comes from the way they ferment.
We visited a brewery, Arcadia, in Kalamazoo, and they top crop, and they reuse the same yeast like hundreds of times. You know, so I mean, it's obviously possible that if you take care of your yeast and you harvest it at the right time and all that, it's perfectly viable, and that answers one of my questions. In that, you know, if you use a dairy tank, it's not a cylindrical conical, so you know, so collecting your yeast traditionally in a brewery with a conical, you just take it off the bottom. You're not going to be doing that,
right? Yeah, it'll be all off the top, and recognizing that that's going to require some additional sort of like standing inside of tanks with a green scrubby, and that those vessels aren't as conducive to the CIP kind of clean in place, which a lot of modern breweries rely on. And at least now, you know, we'll talk again in a couple of years, I feel okay with that. I think that brewing involves a lot of cleaning, and that it seems like a cool job, and people think that, like, oh man, that would be awesome to be the brewer. But I think there's something very grounding to remembering that brewing is cleaning. There's a few other things that you do, but, like, having a scrubby in your hand is, like, that's the sort of natural posture for a brewer.
Yeah, I like to say, if you like washing dishes, you'll love home brewing.
That's right.
So that's right. So the restaurant, the brewery is coming to life here. The lights are coming on. We may be hearing people in the background, but I think that's okay. It's an organic, it's a living organism here, and we're being a part of it. So what am I tasting here? The first of the second five.
All right. So this one is one of the few beers here that I gave a funny name to instead of just calling it what it is. This is WeeDub. It's a double IPA brewed with a bunch of wheat. So it's another, like, pretty pale beer, given that sometimes people associate pale with moderate strength. So it's 8.5%. It's 100 IBUs. And this one is a little bit of a high, like, I wouldn't call it quite a hybrid style, but it's at least not just, like, straight-up American, in that it gets a bunch of Czechsaws as part of the dry hop, as well as some Centennial. So you definitely get, there's definitely citrus there, but there's also that nice kind of pollen-y warmth of Czechsaws.
Boy, I would not have pegged that as a double IPA. And I'm glad that or maybe I should have recorded my comments before. Here's what I thought. The bitterness is very nice, but it's obviously got a lot of residual sugars. But it's not overly sweet. It's not cloying at all. But I could have sworn that it had spice in it. I was going to say that this is a spice beer,
and no actual spices, just hops.
That's amazing. I was trying to decide whether it was cinnamon, or again, clove, or some kind of, I'm not a spice expert, but some sort of holiday spice. There is definitely, on my palate, kind of a holiday spice character.
That's fun.
And I hope I'm not insulting you at all about any of these impressions, but it's delicious. It's really, really good. But it sure fooled me.
I guess it's the sauce.
isn't that fun? How hop character can, depending on where it is and how you use it and which variety and all that, that you can bring all these different, you know, spices and fruits and all these different things to the beer.
It is super cool. It's magic, and I think there is sometimes the association thing too, in that a hop like Saaz just making theories up as we go here, but thinking about that, this is a hop that often gets used in like a triple or other sort of like Belgian style beers that do have that kind of like spicy yeast character, and that they like then end up sort of like pressing some similar buttons in your brain even when they're in a different context.
Talk about the malt bill.
So it's a lot of wheat, just a little bit of carapils, and then domestic Turo.
And what's the gravity? What's the ABV?
8.5.
Oh, I think you said that. I've had some beers, but small samples of each.
Yes.
Boy,
you're being very, very conservative there. That's good. That's good.
I'm glad you're not. I hope you're not offended that I'm not knocking, you know, not finishing off each of these generous samples that you've given me. So do we go? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, that's a spoiler there. I think that says IIPA there.
Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit more of just the straight up take on double IPA, and this one is featuring. Actually, this one's kind of fun. The hop story. There's this farmer up in Wisconsin who was just calling breweries, and he happened on us, and it's been a little bit of a challenging hop year, especially trying to get anything new crop. Which this is a really interesting thing, and the sort of like spot hop availability for some varieties. The newest crop I could get is 2012. Which is crazy. So I would just as soon not brew with 2012 hops. So this is this year's harvest of Centennial. And the fun thing with, like, he is genuinely a small-scale farmer. So I bought his entire harvest, and this beer has his entire Centennial harvest for 2016 in it.
That's amazing. We've been up to Gorse Valley Hops, you know, which is a collective up in Wisconsin. So it's really cool to have hop growing coming back into different parts of the country. This is more of a traditional double IPA,
absolutely,
in my opinion. Absolutely. It's delicious. You know, the citrusy, kind of piney, along with that significant malt backbone and the kind of caramel, or caramel, as we say in Arkansas, flavor. It's delicious and very, very clean. I haven't said this with any of the beers, but I don't get anything that is off in anything so far. So so very, very well done. So talk about your Siloam Springs is in Benton County, Arkansas, a traditionally very conservative, sort of old style religious background, and it shocked the heck out of me when it finally went wet a few years ago, you know, and so to have the thought that there's actually going to be you know, or there are breweries popping up in Benton County, and then to have a brewery popping up in Siloam Springs, which is also the home of JBU, John Brown University, a traditional, you know, conservative religious university.
My alma mater. Yes, my alma mater.
So, you know the temperature, the sort of political temperature of the and cultural temperature of the area. Have there been any challenges in establishing yourself as a brewery in that kind of climate?
Yes,
Okay, next question.
It is. All of those things that you said are fair. So it's been a slow process. And I think the most important thing to recognize is that some of the concerns that population has had are valid, and that you can't just sort of like skim over the surface of them and say, no, you'll get over it. So I feel like part of what was valuable about my years at 28 Springs was that process of taking baby steps towards having there be a beer culture in Siloam Springs, and recognizing that there's a very different culture between what we sort of celebrate with craft beer and a culture of conversation and good convivial public spaces that's different than the notion of celebrating excess. So having 28 Springs be in downtown Siloam and in this very prominent public space, and seeing that this was a good thing for our community, and that and lots of good conversations happened there, I think that was a really important first step.
And we have to say that 28 Springs is a fine restaurant, fine as in higher class or higher, you know, it's fine dining. I would say
good place to take a date.
Yeah. But it also has an extensive beer list and a full bar in downtown Siloam Springs in this historic section of the town. So you were beverage director there, and so there is kind of a foothold in there, in that you're not just coming into a sort of virgin town alcoholically and planning this saloon here in this virtuous town. There is a precedent for people going out and having food with their family and enjoying alcoholic beverages responsibly.
Absolutely, yes. So some good precedent. And then I think within the sort of like steps moving forward, I want to make the Ivory Bill like celebrate what it does, not being shy about that, but at the same time doing it in a way that's sensitive, recognizing that that my opinion is not the only opinion, that there's a range of opinions, and I feel like I have both from I went to John Brown University, and my sort of extended family are like they don't drink. My grandma was the president of the Women's Temperance League of South Dakota, so I've got some like hardcore
little Carrie Nations in your blood.
Yes, I do. Yeah, so this is a little bit of a correction to that. Yes, I've got it. The karma coming here. It was time for my people to do something wetter.
That's a shirt. Time for my people to do something wetter.
That could go a lot of ways.
Which makes a great shirt. Oh, I'm having trouble tearing myself away from that double IPA. It's delicious. And at any point, if you can think of, well, you know the show. If you can think of homebrewing tips that would, in any of these styles or just in general, anything that you've found out that either in your professional career or apart from, that's like, oh, people got to know that, you know, break into the conversation.
Okay, well then I have a good beer for that, and I'm going to switch these up on you just one second here. So yeah, the oatmeal stout. In that, this has been something fun that I've been able to do here that I know a lot of homebrewers do, but just sort of saying again that doing split batches of things really lets you sort of branch out and kind of keep a few more things in bottles or on tap, but that you can kind of brew a base beer with a couple of things in mind. So this one's my oatmeal stout, and a lot of oats. This one, 30% oats, which is stretching my system. This was a very slow sparge, even with a lot of rice hulls. But half of this beer is in kegs and we're serving it. The other half of this beer is still in the fermenter. with cocoa nibs, cinnamon, ancho chilies, vanilla beans, and it's going to be a mole stout. So the same base beer, but it will sort of come across very differently when we sort of keg it and put it on tap here. So those kinds of things are really fun.
Yeah, Andy Coates had a mole stout here.
This is inspired by his, and that was and remains one of my favorite chili beers of all time. So this is definitely an homage to Andy Coates' mole stout.
You've got some big shoes to fill there. Yes, I haven't tasted this beer because I'm just enjoying smelling it. It smells so good. And anybody who says that, oh, I don't like dark beers, if they could smell this beer and not like it, they're horrible people. The closed-minded, horrible people. Because I'm smelling chocolate, I'm smelling coffee. I mean, you could have fooled me. You could have said that there was an adjunct in there, there was something in here besides just the stout ingredients, and I would have believed you. It's got a head start on a lot of and I haven't even tasted it yet, but it's got a head start on a lot of complexity, even before you put all the other stuff in. So I'm going to let you say something. What do you talk about the malt bill, or talk about the beer, and you know how you get this just aroma out of this beer?
So something that I've been working on here, especially, is recognizing that on a homebrew scale, when I was shopping for ingredients, that it really wasn't that big of a deal to have like an ultra, ultra complex recipe where it was 4 ounces of this, 4 ounces of this, 4 ounces of this, because I could just go buy those things from the homebrewing store. And that trying to manage inventory and making sure that my ingredients are all fresh, that I'm trying to make sure that I don't duplicate ingredients. So whereas my homebrewing version of my stout included 2 or sometimes 3 versions of crystal malt, this one has Simpson's medium crystal, which I feel like has great complexity on its own, that you get some of those nice, high, darker, roasty kind of characters that you almost might get out of like a C-120 or Special B, but that you still get the lighter notes too, the more softer, milky kind of caramel flavors. And then again, with the roasting side of things, my stouts from the homebrewing side of things had 3 different sort of like roast temperatures, and this one has 2. So it's roast barley. I feel like if you're a British brewer, you can call your beer a stout or a porter, and no one can tell you otherwise. On the sort of stylistic side of things, that was one of the things that, when I talked to British brewers, made them the angriest, is that Americans who had BJCP training would tell them, this is an incorrect roast profile for a stout. And they'd say, we've been making this for 250 years, buddy. So, as an American, I feel like if I'm going to call a beer a stout, it's going to have roast barley in it. So, some roast barley and then some Carafa 2, which is another malt that I feel like does really wonderful double duty, in that it has like great complexity already there.
It's delicious. It's just as good as it smells. And it's kind of unfair because we've had these beers sitting out for, you know, 45 minutes or whatever it is now. But, man, it's good. It's just rich, and but there's enough hop presence to balance it, so it's not like overly sweet. But, you know, coffee and the roast and chocolate and it's just, I'm probably going to get a growler of that to take home to Susan. So because she loves this. This kind of beer. And of course, she'll have like one out of the growler, and I'll have the rest over time. But anyway, very well done. Talk about the hopping side of things.
So this is very modest on the hops. It's 25 IBUs, 1 16-minute edition of Nugget.
There you go. And so the I've had enough beer. I'm about to step on my soapbox, but you know, in hanging around the homebrew shop and in helping Andy and Steve with the homebrew shop and talking to people about recipes and things, there's a sort of complication of beer recipes brought about by brewing software, I think. And I think brewing software is an asset. And you know, back in the days when I, and I've mentioned this in two or three shows recently, but when I was reading Designing Great Beers by Ray Daniels and was scratching out algebra style, you know, IBU formulas on a yellow notepad, thank goodness for brewing software. But I think there is a tendency toward overcomplicating recipes because, oh, it's 2 points too light. I need to add 2 ounces of this to bring it up in the in that scale on the computer, you know, to brew this beer. So what's your take on that?
It's funny that you mentioned yellow legal pads because that is my home. That's my brewing software. And I've used some of the software, and it feels like it has its place, but I like just the sort of I do think it forces you towards simplicity to just write your recipes down in pencil, and I still it's funny, like the things like hop utilization, that there's you know, all the different formulas, the Tinsith and the
it's another soapbox.
Yes, another soapbox. But a lot of them include things like that, if you sort of plug your recipe into them, that that don't play out with my palate. So for instance, Beersmith will bump your IBUs from hops that you add essentially like at Whirlpool, and I don't get that. Like, to me, I don't get any additional bitterness from those hops. And so I have a manual formula that I plug everything into, and it reflects my experience. And I think that there's a lot about making beer that is science, it's objective, it's quantifiable, and then there's some that is subjective. And that as much as you are brewing something that just kind of, it has to go out in the world and stand on its own 2 feet. You can't be there to sort of like guide someone through the experience every time. It's going through the filter of your palate, and so yeah, practice has to follow how you perceive the results.
There's something to be said for starting off brewing simply and brewing often, and getting to know your ingredients. And
absolutely,
it's something that we've talked about on the show many times, but I think it's a point that's worth repeating. There is value in following someone else's recipe,
yes,
and brewing that, but there is, I think, more value in coming up with your own recipe and failing a few times,
yes,
and saying, what's wrong with this? How can I fix it? How can I make it better? And it's like cooking, you know.
Yes.
If you make there's thousands of different ways to make a spaghetti sauce.
Right.
You know what you like. You know, if you play with the spices in the spice rack, you're going to find out what is your optimum recipe, when you added things, how much, all that. And no recipe book can a recipe book can get you started on that, but no recipe book can help you develop your own.
Absolutely. And I kind of think that homebrewers can sometimes, there's a little bit of snobbery in that the all grain brewers like give the extract brewers a hard time. And I think that's a shame. I think that people would be far better off if it makes them have time in their schedule to brew a couple times a month. They're going to be better brewers sticking with extract and brewing like more times than trying to switch over to all grain and it becomes something that they can only do every couple of months. No offense to any of the other brewers in the Asylum Springs Home Brewing Club, but one of Dave Johnson from Boss, the Home Brewing Club in Asylum Springs, I think he's the best brewer in the club. Oh, okay. And he spent his first 2 years brewing just extract, and he brewed Dunkelweiss. And he brewed Dunkelweiss until it was astonishingly good. Like, I'm hoping to do a collaboration with him here at some point, because his Dunkelweiss is still, like, it's the best. And he did extract, and he figured out how to make all the other ingredients sing before he switched over to all grain. And I think that there is a discipline to keeping it simple that makes you a better brewer.
Awesome. Now, which beer should... There's two left.
Two left. So, brown. Brown next. And then we'll go for the big big dessert beer to cap things off.
And I've been here long enough that they may be open for lunch, so I may get a pizza or something before I go home. But on the extract side of things, we can also say that the quality and variety of extracts now are such that you have a lot more flexibility than when I first started. Like, for instance, Steve got in some cans of Maris Otter extract. And I'm kind of excited about that, and I kind of want to make an extract beer. I kind of want to make some English styles, and I think he's going to make some English style kits, you know, using all English ingredients. You know, there's Pilsner extracts and all kinds of different options that weren't available to us back then. So end of that soapbox. Talk about the brown.
The brown is, again, trying to be like classic American brown ale. So it is, it's chocolate malt, it's Munich, it's, again, that Simpson's medium crystal, and American two-row. This one does get one late hop addition of Cascade, so it's got just a touch of citrus, but it's a very small addition, just kind of building complexity a little bit without actually making it hoppy. 30 IBUs.
It's very nice. It's the hops, compared to the oatmeal stout, the hops are what is the contrast. It doesn't have as big of a, you know, roasty kind of chocolatey nose as the previous one, which is, you wouldn't expect it to. But this is another beer, or this is a beer that, I mean, it has a bit of roast character, but it is not burnt, or, you know, it's all those characters that people associate, novice drinkers associate with dark beers. I don't like dark beers. This is a very drinkable, but it's got a pleasant roast character, and it's very, I say well balanced every show, but it is well balanced. And it's something that you could drink. I could drink as much of that as the, you know, as the blonde. To me, it's as drinkable as the blonde.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
That's not a question. I'm just stopping talking and pointing the mic at you.
I feel like the iconic brown in my mind is Avery Ellie's brown. Mm. And a really fun thing was this summer, I got to brew out in New Mexico with Nick, who had brewed at Avery's, and so we got to talk about Ellie's Brown. So that was fun to actually get insight from someone who had made many, many, many barrels of Ellie's. Though I will say, this is not a copy of that recipe, but it informed it a little bit.
Legal disclaimer,
right?
Although apparently you can't copyright a recipe.
Right, and I do think that this is one thing that is characteristic of a lot of my favorite brewers, is an open-handed kind of aspect to recipes, because I think process is as important as recipe. So just because you've got the recipe to Pliny doesn't mean you can make it, and I appreciate the brewers that have enough confidence in their process that they're willing to be open-handed with recipes.
And I'm a little suspicious about brewers who don't want to share specifics. And part of that is because you're hobbling the rest of the community, and eventually you're hobbling yourself. If you don't share what you're doing, then you are withholding information from the community from which you have learned, and there's a feedback loop. Yeah. You know, I can't tell how many times I've brewed a recipe that I've gotten an idea from somebody else to add to one of my recipes or a new technique or whatever, and I've put it out there, and somebody else has said, "Oh, I've brewed your this and that, but I did this," and then I said, "Oh, well, that's fun," and I pulled it back in, and the whole hobby and industry grows from sharing information.
I completely agree, and it's what makes it fun to be a home brewer, and what's made it fun to be a pro brewer is that openness. I feel like so many businesses, competition to buy up as many patents as you can, and proprietary this and private that, and non-disclosure agreements, and all this kind of ridiculousness. And brewing, at least for the most part, we've seen this amazing collaborative, open-handed kind of spirit, and it's wonderful. And I hope it can stay this way, because it's one of my favorite things about this world.
This has turned into a philosophy show, and after 10 samples of beers, there's no wonder. Okay, here we go.
So this is
the last one. Drum roll! If Steve were here, I'd ask him to do a drum roll. But what do we got here?
So this is my coffee imperial brown ale. And this was my big late winter beer. We didn't end up getting much of a late winter.
No,
but
no winter at all.
But it's still, I don't know, it still gets cold at night. You can go out in a t-shirt and get cold enough that you need this beer to warm you back up. So it's 9.7. Really wanted to feature coffee prominently in this one. Done a couple of collaborations with Mark Bray from Airship. One of my favorite local roasters. He's got Mama Carmen's shop here in Fayetteville, and then the shop and roastery up in Bentonville. Mark and Zephon from Airship are just super fun people. So we went up and cupped some coffees. This one is an El Salvador Pacamara. They roasted this coffee. The next day they had it waiting for me at Mama Carmen's. They didn't grind it until I was on my way there to pick it up. So this coffee was probably, well, no longer than 15 minutes in between when it was ground and when it was in the fermenter. So we did a dry hop once we'd crashed the beer out. So yeast was gone, nice bright beer, and dry hopped it with a whole bunch of fresh coffee.
It's going to take me a little time to dissect this beer. It's very complex. So talk about. I mean, you just put ground coffee in the fermenter.
Uh-huh. Yep, the coarsest grind that we could do. So, kind of a French press sort of size roast, right directly in the fermenter, and then kegged off of the fermenter, which is something I do. Especially for beers where I'm trying to get like the maximum sort of aromatic impact out of it, is I'll actually carbonate right in the fermenter. And sometimes with the IPA and with the rye. And that very last keg might have just a little bit of sediment in it, and we'll try to pour that off. I've also done... Again, with Airship, we brewed a collaboration batch of porter, and for that we did what they call flash brewing, which is the method that they do for their iced coffee. Brewing coffee hot helps you get like all the really nice acidic qualities of the coffee, and people will say, "Oh, I like the sort of low acidic coffee," and some of the things like doing a toddy brewer give you like a really really low acid cup of coffee. And especially if you have like acid reflux or some other kind of reason for that acid to be a problem, that makes sense. But to really get the complexity of a coffee, the acidity is really an important part. And in the same way that we experience this with beer, that a fruit beer, it's got to have some acidity. Even if you then kind of like round out that acidity with some other aspect of sweetness, fruit in the absence of acidity, it's missing something. So we did their flash brew where they brew hot a kind of a concentrate. When they're serving it as an iced coffee, they brew it right into ice. And in this case, I brought kegs of porter over, and we brewed right into the keg. And yeah, we're really pleased with that as a really nice aromatic coffee addition. And we played with a bunch of different ratios, and it ended up being about 7%. I should go back and check my notes on that. But about in the neighborhood of 7% of kind of coffee within the beer, and that was enough to get a really great impact, which was less than I expected. I thought we were going to need more than that. If we went any more than that, it ended up just smelling like coffee. Like, yeah. you kind of lost the aromatic qualities of the porter.
But that's a different beer.
Right. Right.
This beer, I do get the coffee in there, but it's not like coffee beer, you know,
yeah.
Like a fist in the face coffee beer. This is, it's a perfect dessert beer, in my opinion. I'm not wanting to drink a lot of this very fast. I'm wanting to sip this and savor it because it is so rich. And there's the coffee note in there, but the caramel or the caramel notes, it's really impressive. I mean, it's just like, you know, I'm thinking like a candy bar, like a good, you know, caramel candy bar. But again, not overly sweet. It is pretty sweet, but that's, I think, expected. But it's not like cloyingly sweet. But it's just, it's so complex. There's just so much going on in there.
Thank you.
Again, that's not a question.
Of these beers, it definitely has the most residual sweetness. So that is definitely the case. Though the sort of warming quality of the alcohol kind of helps kind of balance that sound. So it's 9.7% ABV. And for a beer that big, the hops are really modest. It's 25 IBUs. And I have, again, with doing a little bit of kind of dividing a batch up and trying some different things. So we're going to serve all of this, the sort of plain batch that's the Coffee Imperial Brown Ale. Probably we've got actually down to our last keg or two, so not much of this left. I've also pulled a few kegs back and aging them with oak. So this is another kind of fun thing with this is like maybe we can do like the super quick brewery tour after this. It is a really small brewery. It is essentially a living room sized brewery with 3.5 barrel fermenters and 2 7 barrel fermenters. And that's it. That's the brewery. I have one bright tank in the walk-in cooler, and apart from that, that's it. So I don't have space to do things like have a nice rack of bourbon barrels. But I bought some oak staves and soaked them in mezcal, and then did a follow-up soak in bourbon. And so now those oak staves are aging with the Coffee Imperial Brown Ale, and I expect that by the time that those are ready to serve, I won't be here. I'll be at the Ivory Bill. But I'm excited to leave a little something behind for next winter.
Wow. Planting seeds. Casey, this has been as fun as I expected. And I appreciate your time, I appreciate your knowledge, and I appreciate your continued friendship.
Thank you, James. It's been really fun to talk to you, and thank you for stopping by.
Well, thanks again to Casey. I did take a growler of the oatmeal stout home, and my wife, Susan, did love it. And after Casey and I finished talking, we moved to the bar. I moved to iced tea, and we shared a couple of pizzas and more conversation over that next hour. So I appreciate Casey spending so much time with me. That morning. It was very enjoyable, and I wish him all the best of luck with Ivory Bill, and we will catch up with him when Ivory Bill is up and running.
If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are 100% pure badger hair shaving brush with natural bamboo handle, and Deep Red Stamps chicken wire background rubber stamp. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. Well, that's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production out for Basic Brewing Radio. Vacation is, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.